And let's get more reaction now to the news about North Korea, that President Trump has agreed to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un for direct negotiations about that country's nuclear program. The meeting would be a first for a sitting U.S. president and is expected to take place within the next 2 months. Sung Yoon Lee is a professor in Korean studies at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. Professor, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
So what do you make of this? These two leaders were trading insults and threats of war not long ago.
That's right. How to explain this unconventional outreach by the North Korean leader? It is highly unlikely that he woke up on New Year's Day and decided to be a nice guy going forward. Far more likely is the fact that he's been planning this all along after that year-long banner ballistic year that Kim Jong-un had in 2017. It's time now to get the United States and South Korea to weaken sanctions against the North Korean regime, to buy a free pass for the next provocation, which will come, and also to change the dynamics and to paint Trump into a corner as the aggressor, as the party less interested in peace. Kim is really taking a page out of his daddy's playbook in the year 2000. Kim Jong-il met with the South Korean leader in 2000 in the month of June, pocketed $500 million in doing so, and then invited President Clinton to Pyongyang. And the only reason that Clinton could not make that trip was due to the uncertain political scene at home in the wake of the Al Gore, George W. Bush vote recount. And time simply ran out. Clinton intended to visit North Korea. And of course, in late October, Secretary of State Madeleine Albright did just that. She was in Pyongyang toasting Kim Jong-il. So we have to remember that North Korea is very good at both the carrot and the stick.
So it sounds like you're saying that you don't believe that this is going to lead to some breakthrough of peace.
Well, I'm not against talking to North Korea, and I think if President Trump were to take a hard line and say at this point that I'm not interested in talking with the North Korean leader, then his critics would say ideological rigidity and all those things are hampering any chances of improvement in the relationship, even peace in the region. At the same time, what will they talk about? Kim Jong-un thus far has made no concession whatsoever. For him to say, in the meantime, I'm not going to conduct any more missile or nuclear tests, or I'm amenable to denuclearization talks, it's like saying, you know, I'm not going to commit any more crimes, so give me a reward. So what can be gained from all this? Well, if President Trump were to make any kind of advancement on getting North Korea to loosen its unprecedented censorship over its people, dismantle some of its nuclear programs, release detained U.S. citizens and South Korean citizens. If we can make progress on these in incremental steps even, then I think this moment of meeting between the leader of the United States and North Korea may come to be remembered as a powerful symbolic moment. But I think the path to Pyongyang really is strewn with even more traps along the way, and it's a risky proposition.
Madeleine Albright, who was Secretary of State under President Clinton, visited North Korea. She's responding today to the news of this meeting, and she says she wonders about the preparation that the Trump administration is actually has and will do before this meeting.
Well, that is a concern, and of course, everything seems very much rushed. You need weeks to plan for a summit meeting between even allies. At the same time, that visit by Secretary Albright to Pyongyang was very much rushed. And in the remaining weeks in office, President Clinton was really rushing through to carve out some kind of a North Korea legacy. We need to be careful. We need to realize that summit meetings, unlike a blind date, there's no spontaneity. Everything needs to be reconciled, agreed upon before the actual face-to-face meeting and handshake. So beyond the bonhomie and smiling for the cameras and so on, what substantive gains are there to be realistically expected? And at this point, it's rather murky.
It was a surprise to everybody what happened yesterday, this announcement of a meeting. I guess it wouldn't be that surprising if it falls through in the next couple of months. What happens if these talks fall through, or what happens if there is a meeting and things go south?
Well, North Korea is very good at pointing the finger at the United States. It's maintained for decades that it is so-called hostile U.S. policy that drives North Korea to maintain a hyper-expanded military. For a nation of 25 million people, North Korea maintains an army well over a million. So North Korea probably will renege, in my view. And looking at what happened in recent years, on Leap Day, February 29th, 2012, the U.S. and North Korea basically came to an agreement. North Korea agreed to suspend, to freeze its missile and nuclear weapons, a moratorium on further weapons tests. In return, the U.S. was to provide North Korea with 240,000 tons of food aid. Just 16 days later, North Korea announced that it would launch a satellite into space, which, of course, requires ballistic missile technology. And Americans found themselves rather dumbfounded. How could they just lie to us straight in our face like that? North Korea is not shy about strategic deception. They will come up with some reason to walk away from this proposition, and they will be able to blame the Trump administration for that.
That's Sung-Yoon Lee, who's a professor in Korean studies at the Fletcher School at Tufts University. Professor, thank you.
Thank you.